Grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Today's programming is made possible in part by a grant from the Living Yoga Center in downtown Champaign, offering a variety of classes designed to help students bring balance into their lives by finding strength and serenity through the practice of yoga. Registration is not required and individuals can join at any time. For more information, call 384-5829 or www.livingyogacenter.net.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. And we're also pleased to welcome back to the program Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Cooperative Extension in Champaign. And we have her here on the program with us every month, always on a Tuesday. We start in the spring and do this through the summer and into the fall to give you the opportunity to ask questions about things that grow in the home landscape. We can talk about grass, about trees and shrubs, about things that flower, about stuff you can eat, any and all of that, houseplants, that too, any and all of that, certainly welcome. Maybe you're having a problem and you need some advice. You're thinking about what you would like to plant this year and you're looking for some suggestions. Any and all of that is certainly fine. And I know Sandy will do her best to help you out. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, we do also have a toll-free line that is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. And then here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. At any point here, if you have questions, you can call us. Thank you for being here again.
Good morning.
Once again. So it feels like we're into summer. It's only the, as I consult my calendar watcher, it's only the 11th of May. Can we feel that if we want to plant a tender annual or something like that, that it's okay that we can put it out there and we're not going to have to worry about a cold blast coming along? It's not that it's impossible, but that the likelihood would be small.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, there certainly is still a possibility, we'll put it that way, but it's a very remote possibility. And just looking at the forecast for the next week or so, it doesn't look like it's going to be an issue.
No.
So I think it'd be fine if people have things like, you know, these would be things like basil, impatiens, dahlias, all those things that we normally, that really are warm, loving plants for the most part. You really shouldn't have any problem getting those out. You may have to do a little watering, unfortunately. Haven't had the best of rain.
Yeah, that's true. And here, I guess we have a daily chance of rain over the next few days, but it sounds like it's going to be kind of spotty, that if you would happen to be under the place where the storm is, you could get an inch. But if you're a mile away from that, you might not get anything.
Yeah.
So that's one of those things that you have to pay attention to, as it also has been kind of on the dry side this spring. We had that big rain in March, and then we went, what did we get, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? It seemed like we went a long time.
April
we didn't
was
get
very
anything
dry.
Through April.
Yeah, April was very dry for us. Normally we get a lot more rain then. But that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to have a dry summer, so let's hope.
All right. Well, I think we already have somebody ready to go on our toll-free line in Indiana, Center Point, Indiana, right here, line four. Where is Center Point?
East of Terre Haute.
Okay.
About 17 miles or so.
Okay.
Is it in the center?
Oh no,
of Indiana,
along the west coast.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. My question involves: I have these little black bugs on a plant that I have planted around my rose bushes, and I can't remember honestly what the plant is. I think it's an evening primrose. They're a hard shell, little bitty bug.
And they jump.
They jump when I squirted them with Safer soap this morning.
Yeah. There's a little flea beetle is what it's called, and it's a beetle, but it jumps like a flea, and so that's why they call it flea beetle. And it seems to love primroses. Absolutely love it.
It's just chewing them alive.
Yeah.
Okay, how do I get rid of them?
Well, I will tell you that it generally isn't life-threatening for the plant, but they will eat the flowers, and so you kind of lose the whole benefit of having the flowers. So what you might, Safer soap kind of just kills the ones that are there, but it doesn't really, there's no residual, as in when they come back, it doesn't really help you too much. Mm-hmm. So you'd almost have to go with something along the line of, Seven or Malathion, something that has a little residual to it. But obviously, read and follow all the label directions and use it accordingly. But unfortunately for that one, you kind of have to do a little bit extra.
So something more toxic.
Yeah, and that, again, that's up to you, because it isn't life-threatening for the plant, but I will tell you they will eat the flowers, too, as they develop, and so unfortunately.
I have another question concerning house plants. I have two shuffleras that have developed a sap sucker. I have tried washing them all, the top to bottom, leaves, stems, branches, everything with mild soap and water. Mm-hmm. I've tried alcohol. I have tried squirting them with safer soap, and they still keep coming back. Are they coming in from the dirt?
Are you talking about scale?
It's a little bitty bug that, yeah, attaches to the vein of the leaf, and it causes the leaf to drip sap, and it makes a sticky residue all around the base of the plant on the floor.
Yeah, we're probably talking about scale.
Scales, okay.
Yeah, and unfortunately, those are one of the hardest ones to get rid of, as you've found in the way of insects. And they're not very susceptible to insecticides when they're in their adult stage.
Okay.
So it's one of those timing things. So when you see the really small ones, and there are smaller ones, if you see the real small ones, that's a good time to spray. So you may have to, you know, spray, and I would use, and insecticidal soaps usually fairly effective on it, but you are going to have to spray several times, like once a week for the next 7 or 8 weeks, unfortunately.
Okay.
And often what I do now that it's warmer is put them outside.
Right, I've moved them out.
Right, because there's lots of things like ladybugs and stuff that love to eat them, and they won't get rid of all the population, but they'll certainly reduce it.
Okay.
So that may help some, too.
All right, thank you very
much. Yeah, good luck.
All right,
okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Maybe we should talk about the letter that you got, because last time on the program we had some questions from people who were having trouble with sort of invasive woody shrub tree things that they're wanting to know, well, how do I get rid of these things? And we talked about various things that you can use, herbicides, and particularly there are cut surface things that what you do is you cut the thing off, and then just as soon as you can, you paint some of this stuff on the cut surface, and what it'll do is the plant will take it up, and it'll go down into the plant and into the roots, and eventually it'll kill that.
Right.
But if people don't would rather not do that, rather try something else. We had a listener who called in who wrote you a letter and had a suggestion.
Yeah, I had a real nice letter from a gentleman in Robinson, Illinois, and he told me what he does when it comes to problems with stumps, because we always seem to have that. And it's usually it's the small ones. Most of the time people are talking about the small ones that the birds bring in, and we're talking about, you know, maybe they're, you know, not, you know, the size of your finger or something. We're not talking about really, really big stumps here. But at any rate, he mentioned actually getting a number 10 tin can, which is kind of like the coffee can size for the most part. And you can get those from restaurants or coffee, whatever. And actually invert that over the little stump, you know, cut it off and invert that over the stump, and then put like a brick or a rock or something on top of it. And then it makes sense. And then as it resprouts, it, you know, doesn't get any light and basically sort of starves itself out. And that would be one technique. And, you know, it'd be one of those things, you know, he mentioned, well, maybe people don't like the way those cans look, but, you know, you could even spray paint them, you know, green. You wouldn't even notice. Because it is going to take, you're going to have to, you know, let them sit there for a while, too, to make sure that they go ahead and die. But I thought that was a good technique. So people want to try that. Put a can over the top of them.
It definitely will work. Given enough time, it will work. And it doesn't involve using herbicides. So if you'd rather not do that. And if you have something like, I think maybe we were talking about mulberries, but there are probably other things you can deal with the same sort of way.
Right. And it is going to work on the smaller ones, obviously. And then for ones that maybe really do a lot of suckering, you may find it's not quite as effective, you know, the ones that are sending out roots. But usually those smaller ones aren't really developed enough that they do a lot of that. So, good technique. We're always looking for new ideas.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk with somebody else here. We have a caller in Monticello on line number 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question about a small thornless hawthorn tree, a beautiful tree that almost all the leaves have brown spots developing on them. I wonder what's causing that and what to do about it.
Mm-hmm. They can get a fungal disease called rust, and it is one of those things that you'd have to use a fungicide spray for.
Mm-hmm.
And right off the top of my head, I'm not sure what fungicide that would be. It'd probably be something like Daconil. I think it's probably one of them that's listed for rust diseases on on hawthorns. And it is one of those interesting diseases where it actually alternates its generations, believe it or not, from things like cedar trees, juniper trees, those things. But so it is one of those things that normally would take a fungicide spray. It generally isn't life-threatening, but it's certainly not aesthetically nice.
What was the spray that you mentioned?
I think Daconil would be one of them that would work for that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything you want to add anything?
Well, the other thing I guess I should mention is that timing is always really important on those. And so many times with these diseases, it's really kind of too late at this point.
You have to put it on before you see it.
Yeah. So it's one of the – but it probably is going to be a tree that is obviously susceptible to it, and you may have to think about that every year. Or I would just – certainly people are making selections. Select ones that are resistant to it because there certainly are some hawthorns that are resistant.
You think it's too late to spray it now?
I would imagine yes.
Okay. But the tree should come back next year?
Yeah, it shouldn't be life-threatening for it. And I would just general maintenance kinds of things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. And let's see, we'll go to Urbana. This is our next caller, line one. Hello.
Hello. Two questions. What is the time frame for spraying for the eponymous scale?
Well, you could. Did you happen to do a dormant spray at all? Or
no, I didn't.
Yeah. Let me look here real quick. Because I was just thinking about that with some of the other scale problems that we have. And I'm just looking here. She says. I actually have information here right in front of me.
We should have a little music bed that we can play.
Exactly.
While she's looking through her.
Because you can do a dormant spray, I guess is the one. And I don't know. I was trying to see if there was actually another spray besides that one that you could do.
Well, there's a specific spray I know. And I was thinking it was toward the end of June, but it might be in May. And I was wondering when I had to get that on because I saw a few of them.
Okay. You want them a scale. You can spray in early June.
Okay.
And that's when the catalpa start to bloom. You know what a catalpa is?
Yes, indeed.
There you go. That's a good indicator.
Okay.
That would be your other time to spray.
The other question, with the stumps, would wrapping in black plastic be effective?
I would think so. Anything that's going to sort of starve them out as they sprout and they're not able to, go ahead and photosynthesize, sure.
We've got some that are very stubborn.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks for the call. I guess I kind of thought about that too, that it would be the same sort of thing, and that maybe if you had a patch of stuff and you couldn't put a can over everything, you could put a piece of heavy black plastic, I guess, put it on top of there. Again, I'm sure you'd want to weight it down with something to make sure that it would stay there. But it would be, like sometimes people do that if they have some area where they have a lot of weedy growth or stuff that they want to get rid of, and they're willing to let it sit there long enough.
Yeah, that's the problem. Sometimes people don't want to let it sit there because you'd have to let it sit there for a couple months at least, and I would say probably 3 months. So that's kind of gets into your whole season. But I've done that. I had a strawberry bed that was just absolutely inundated with violets, and they were just taking it over, and I really was having a hard time dealing with it. So I just did that for one season, and it worked out very well.
Okay. And you can do that. You can do that with a transparent plastic or with a black?
You're better off with black plastic. Okay. Transparent plastic just acts like a greenhouse, and the weeds will continue to grow. Now, sometimes the idea is that it gets hot enough that they don't grow, but you're better off just using black plastic because then you're doing two things. You're heating things up, and then you're also restricting light. So you're trying to kill them off in two ways. So black plastic's better.
All right. Next is a caller in Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about my river birch tree. I have a 7-year-old river birch that we were out of town last year for a couple weeks, and when we got back from being gone in the summer, I think maybe it had been really hot when we were out of town. Anyway, it looked very stressed, and then it had lost a lot of leaves. The leaves had turned very light green, and quite a few had fallen. And then this year, it's kind of has four stalks coming up out of the ground and four trunks, and I ended up having to cut one of them off because it didn't leaf out at all. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the tree leafed out, but I would say maybe half what it should have leafed out. And a lot of the tips of the branches are dead or haven't leafed out yet. So I wondered maybe if it needs water or what you might think of that.
Well, probably a couple things. And when was this planted?
About 7 years ago.
Okay. a couple things with river birches. They do get what's called iron chlorosis, and that causes yellowing in between the veins. And so it'll be the veins will stay kind of green, but then in between the veins is yellow. And that's fairly common on river birches around here. So there's a stress right there. They don't like drought. I mean, that's why they're called river birches for the most part. Normally in native areas, they'd be in wetter sites. So they don't particularly like drought. So there's another stress right there. They can also get some leaf spot diseases. That sometimes also they'll be spots on the leaves, and then the leaves may fall off. So you may have seen a number of things kind of happening all at the same time, and certainly that cumulative effect, unfortunately, is having a problem, causing a problem on this particular plant. So I think I would think about a couple things. I would think about you need to fertilize it with it's what's called chelated iron. And if you just go into the stores and say you need a fertilizer for acid-loving plants, usually that'll help, and you'll get the right thing. But just say it has iron yellowing or iron chlorosis.
That's probably what's happening with my pin oak as well.
Oh, yeah, and very common with pin oaks as well.
I put the plugs in my pin oak for a few years, the ones where you drill it and push them in, and that seemed to help a little bit, but maybe it's... Is the fertilizer something I would spray on the roots, or how is that applied?
Usually, it's either a granular, or a lot of times it's just a concentrate, and then you add to water,
uh-huh.
and then you basically water it in,
uh-huh.
kind of thing. So, just depending on what product you end up with, but usually it's a granular kind of thing that you just spread on underneath the drip line, and it'll tell you the size of the tree and you know how much you need to apply and all that good stuff. So, I'd really think about doing that, and you'd want to go ahead and do it on your pin oak while you're at it,
right?
And then also just watering during drought periods is going
okay.
to be real important for the river birch.
And
to
is
see.
That something that a tree can kind of recover from if it hasn't leafed out that well, or is it probably going to, is it kind of sickly?
Well, it's not good that you're seeing dieback of the branches. I mean, that's not good. And I would go ahead and remove anything that's obviously dead at this
okay.
point. I'd go ahead and remove it. And obviously, it's one of those things that's going to take them a while to come out of it. Is it going to die? I'm not sure. It's not great that it's doing this, but
right.
there's still a chance. I would say if, you know, 2/3 of the tree look salvageable, then I'd say you're probably in pretty good shape.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you for the call. Well, let's go on here. The next person to go is caller in Oakwood on our line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Yeah, I got a couple questions. I've got a corkscrew willow, and it's got suckers coming up around the base. Is it okay to trim those at this point in time?
Sure. They'll probably come back.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know with sap running or whatever.
No, it's fine. And you could drive a truck over a corkscrew willow and it would be just fine. I mean, you cannot kill those things. I mean, they do get some diseases and stuff, but then they sprout up from the base. So I don't think you'll have any problem. And you can actually cut those off and then stick them in the ground and then you'll have another corkscrew willow.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
there you go.
And the second question, so far I've just heard you talking mostly about trees. I don't know. It's a shrub, I suppose. A hibiscus?
Mm-hmm.
Can that go out in the full sun?
Is this the tropical one, or is this the...
I lost the little card that was attached there.
Okay, does it have a real shiny leaf?
I'd say more lacy or... not real shiny, no. No.
Okay.
It looks like, felt kind of texture.
Oh. Well, then that sounds like the shrub, the hardy shrub. The trouble with hibiscus is there's a couple one. There's the tropical one that has a really large flower, the great big flower, has a shiny leaf, you know, and that's one that is more like a house plant. You treat it as a house plant. It's not hardy here, and you'd want to put it in the shade and all that kind of stuff. There is another hibiscus, or what's also called Rosa Sharon, that is certainly a shrub that's hardy here, and I would certainly put it in full sun. That would be a good place to put it.
The flowers seem to be about 3-4 inches across.
Yeah, that's probably the hardy one, sounds like.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks for the call. And talking about your corkscrew willow, I know a number of years back once, I don't know if it was Mom's Day or something like that, we sent one of our moms a flower arrangement, and it had a corkscrew willow in it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And after all the other stuff in the arrangement died, the corkscrew willow, and I think it must have been sprouting in the container.
I believe it.
And they thought, well, okay, what the heck? And they took it out and then stuck it in the ground. And then we were there a couple of years afterwards, and
there
was
there
a big...
It is.
There it is. It's a big corkscrew willow.
They are so easy.
Just from... from those things, those few stems that were there in the flower arrangement.
Yes, yes, yes. I decided one day that for some strange reason, I was going to use them to sort of prop up other plants, the corkscrew willow, and it would look really pretty with these corkscrews. Well, of course, I ended up with a corkscrew forest around these plants, so bad idea.
Very good. All right. Belgium is next. This is line number 3. Hello.
Hello. Thought I would continue on the tree topic today. I plant a lot of trees in my living area to make sure that I don't have to mow much grass. And I've been trying to get trees that are native pretty much to our area here. And one that seems to be impossible to get, you can buy the lumber, but you can't buy the tree, it seems like, is what you would call a tulip poplar. In lumber is called yellow poplar. Do you know any place to get these kind of trees?
I assume you're talking about tulip trees.
Well, yes, a tulip popper.
Sometimes they're called tulip popper, but they're also called tulip trees.
Okay. Well,
I would be really surprised.
To magnolia.
Pardon?
I'm not referring to magnolia.
No. It's called a tulip tree.
Okay.
And that's how, maybe that's the problem. Because it's the same thing. Tulip tree, tulip poplar, they're all, yellow poplar, I've seen it listed. They're all the same thing.
Okay.
And I would find it, and tulip trees shouldn't be hard to find.
Well, you know, you look in the woods and you can't find them. It's amazing. But they've got lots of trees, but you can't find the ones to plant.
Right, but they're native to more. Are you here in central Illinois?
Oh, yes.
They're really more native to the eastern forest.
Well, in Indiana, I know there's several in that area.
That's part of the eastern forest.
Well, yes, ma'am, but it's only about 20 miles.
Well, you'd be surprised. The western edge of the eastern forest is like Vermilion County, Iroquois. That's the western edge of the eastern forest, and it doesn't come over this far.
Well, that's where I'm at, ma'am.
So he's over by Danville.
And it could be just a matter of it could be a light thing, too, I suppose.
I guess.
Now, I'm sorry. I thought you were here in Champaign. I missed that.
No. The other thing I wanted to mention is you just spoke about hibiscus. The little tropical hibiscus you keep in the house as as just a house plant.
Uh-huh.
If you go into the South Seas, they actually use it as a lumber.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Very large.
It's that big? Wow.
Oh, it's huge.
I bet that's beautiful when it blooms.
Oh, I bet it is, too.
Yeah. Well, good luck. I would be surprised if you can't find tulip trees, but it could be with tulip trees like with oaks and stuff, they don't necessarily germinate very well in really shady areas, and so maybe that's why you're having a harder time finding them in the forest as babies.
But you should be able to go out. You should be able to go to a greenhouse.
The goods are sold as an ornamental. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck.
All right. Let's go on here. I think we have somebody on line number 1. Do we in Urbana? Is there a caller there? On line 1 in Urbana? Hello? Maybe not. Maybe we've lost that person, and maybe they would like to call us back. And, of course, anybody who wants to call, all you have to do is pick up the telephone and dial the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. We're already here at the midpoint talking with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she is here every month. Spring, summer, into the early fall, always on a Tuesday. I guess it's the second Tuesday. Second Tuesday of the month we do the show. And you can give us a call. Anything coming up that you might want to mention event-wise?
All kinds of garden walks, of course, coming up. So if people want to check in their area, but certainly here in Champaign, the Master Gardener Garden Walk is June 20th. So if people are interested in that, and always a great opportunity to see gardens here within Champaign-Urbana. And if people want information on that, they can go to most of the local garden centers here in Champaign-Urbana. Are selling tickets, but they can also call us at 217-333-7672.
Okay. It's an opportunity to go and walk around in somebody's yard who really knows what they're doing.
It's a great place to get ideas. I mean, it really is. And I think I hear so many people say that I could do that in my yard. So it's a nice way. Or to see plants that you've never seen before or whatever. So June 20th.
Right. Okay, June 20th. That's a Sunday. Mm-hmm. It does cost a little money, but not very much.
$8, and all the money goes toward the Master Gardener projects, the community garden projects here in Champaign-Urbana.
So. Okay. Well, let's talk with some other folks here. Several Champaign callers. First is line number 2. Hello. Their caller there, line in Champaign, on line number 2.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I have 2 questions. One is, I have a big ash tree in my backyard, and I've been hearing last summer about this ash borer. Mm-hmm. what's the time on that? I guess I'm assuming I'm going to lose this tree.
Oh, I wouldn't necessarily assume you're going to lose the tree. As far as the timing, we're probably a little later in the season, and that would be a good question for Phil Nixon. Maybe he could. Is he going to be on soon?
No, he was just on a couple weeks ago. I'm sure he'll be on maybe within the next couple
so
weeks.
He could. I'm sure he could tell you a lot more about the emerald ash borer and some of those. But we're really, as far as timing, I think it's more in the line of like later on in May. But we're probably getting close here where they'd be active because they're. But it would be one of those things that I wouldn't count on you having that problem. I think your best bet is to keep the tree healthy by trying to water it during drought periods, fertilizing, those kind of things is probably your best bet.
Oh, okay. So. I understood that was pretty much going to wipe the ash out, but it sounds like that's not the case.
No, not necessarily here in Illinois. It's certainly been a horrible problem in the northern areas of the United States, but we haven't seen that yet, so let's hope it doesn't happen.
Okay. The other question I have under the ash tree, which is in my backyard, I was on vacation a couple of years ago and some thistle sprouted, and at this point I have a lot of thistle, so mm-hmm. I'm thinking I need to pretty much kill off the whole backyard, and I'd like to plant it with a ground cover that doesn't grow very much. Because it's very shady under that tree. Do you have any suggestions about the killing and the replanting?
Well, I guess, you know, the one you can use something like just a non-selective herbicide, something like Roundup or it's glyphosate. And you certainly could do that, and you have to read and follow label directions. It's non-selective. It doesn't know the difference between a good plant and a bad plant, so you have to use it accordingly. I don't know, is this area just too big as far as trying to dig up the thistles?
Oh,
just too
big. Yeah. Dig it up is not an issue.
Yeah. So it would be one of those things. Then you'd want to spray and then let the weeds die down, and which may take a week or so, depending on the temperature and how moist they are, those kinds of things. So, and then after that, you could go ahead and replant. And there's certainly any number of ground covers out there, Ajuga, Vinca, English ivy. There's a lot of those if you just want a ground cover type of thing. There's also lots of shade plants if you really want to develop a shade garden, you know, with hostas and all those good things. And really, as far as hostas, they really don't take a whole lot of care. So,
So Ajuga and Vinca were the
two that you... Ajuga. It's Ajuga.
A-J-U-G-A. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll look into that. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Next is another Champagne caller, and this is line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
When my grandmother went to the nursing home, I took 2 cuttings from her lilac bushes. One was purple, one was white. They were just little sticks. I came here and planted them that 7 years ago, and the plants are doing fine. They're like 7 feet tall. They haven't died. But in 7 years, we have yet to see a blossom.
And wow.
What's the problem?
Are you pruning them at all? Or?
No, haven't done anything to them, really.
Are they in full sun? Or?
No, they're it's kind of shady. They get a little bit of sun, but not a whole lot.
Well, that could be your problem. They'll bloom better if you get them in full sun.
Okay. Well, I think they're too big to move at this point.
Yeah. Well, maybe you need to take another cutting.
Yeah, that might work.
And then move them from there. And sometimes there's little sprouts that'll come up from the sides.
Right.
And then you could certainly move those. But I would imagine that's probably what's going on. It's like a lot of plants. They will live in the shade, and they do fine, but they don't necessarily flower well in the shade.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if it hasn't done it yet, it's probably not going to happen.
I would be very – I mean, because usually lilacs, even with small plants, they'll go ahead and flower.
Mm-hmm.
So after 7 years, something's wrong.
Thank
okay.
you.
Good luck.
Bye.
All right. Thank you. And to another Champagne caller. This is line 1. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about lawn care. I have a yard that's probably 60% grass, 40% non-grass. And I'm wondering at this time of the year, what's the best approach to try and build up the lawn?
So when you say it's non-grass, it's...
I have basically clover and moss.
Okay. So this is a shady spot?
Yes.
Okay. Does it get any sun?
Yeah, it gets some sun. I think it just happened to get too wet last year,
oh,
and the moss kind of took over.
Yeah.
And then when that happened, it started choking out the grass.
Yeah, but really, just to, I know it looks like the moss is choking out the grass, but moss, if you've ever, you know, looked at it, it has like no root system. So it's really hard for moss to choke out grass. It just sort of looks that way.
Mm-hmm.
And moss just comes into open areas just because there's no grass there. And that's when the moss comes in. So it's really not the moss killing it off. It's what's happening environmentally, and the grass isn't growing well. And so the moss just comes in. It's just kind of opportunistic. So we need to figure out why it's not growing well. So as you mentioned, you know, maybe too wet. I don't know if that's always going to be an issue for you, but and certainly shade is always an issue with grasses. And so you need to have some of the shade-loving grasses, so like creeping red fescue, something like that. I think at this point, I would probably look at a couple things. We're getting kind of late in the season to be trying to reseed things, but if you're overseeding and you can water it periodically, you may be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, we'd probably like to do that a little bit earlier. Also, the other thing is with clover is they have found that it does better in low fertility soils.
Mm-hmm.
So if you fertilize, you'll find that the clover doesn't do as well.
Okay. Should I try and kill it first, or should I try and aerate it and just fertilize to build up the grass that's there?
You may find you want to try that first. You know, uh-huh. This is a good time to go ahead and think about fertilizing.
Uh-huh.
So you may want to go ahead and fertilize and then kind of evaluate it after that. And then if the grass is growing better, then you may find it sort of helps to fill in some of these holes, maybe where the moss is coming in, those kind of things. And then certainly later in the season, there's no reason why you can't do an herbicide treatment for a lot of these broadleaf perennials in like October. Actually,
okay.
That's a good time to do it. So I think I would think about really trying to get the grass growing better and then evaluate it after that.
Okay. Well, thank you for your help.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Bye.
Very good. We continue. The next caller is in Indiana on our line 4 toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I thought I should say something about the tulip tree in Indiana at one of my front yards. It's the state tree. But
for Indiana?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Unless they've changed it recently.
No, that's fine. I mean, I wasn't familiar.
Every time you get in some flower man that gets a lot of money, he wants to change the stuff. So, last time I checked, it was...
No, yeah, I'm sure you're right.
But I would presume the person in Illinois, even if he's outside the eastern boundary, or western boundary of the eastern forest,
mm-hmm.
might have the same trouble. We have to move our cars
in
the summertime, and some kind of aphid just
right,
takes over.
Right. You're right.
And it literally rains. You can get out of
good
the car
point.
In time you get to the front door. Your glasses are covered, your shirt's covered, your arms are covered, your wrists are covered.
Yeah,
so
good point.
To think about.
Yeah, very good point. And I'm glad you brought that up because it is an issue. And we certainly would get it even through here in Illinois, you know, even where it's not necessarily native. So,
yeah.
So
nice
yeah, good point.
Tree and all that, but
yeah.
Boy, is it gets gummy.
Yeah, and it's a very tall tree, too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's sometimes it's too big for a lot of areas. So good point. I'm glad you brought that up.
Okey-doke.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let's continue here. The next caller would be in St. Joe and line number 2. Hello.
Hello. Hi. I have a question about our vegetable garden. I want to grow watermelons, but I've heard it's very difficult to grow around here. I was wondering if you have any suggestions or if it's even worth a try.
Well, it certainly is worth a try, but they do get some insect problems. What I would go for is maybe some of the smaller ones, a little what are called icebox melons, so you don't have to wait quite as long to get, you know, a decent-sized fruit that you can go ahead and eat. So I'd probably choose some of those. I wouldn't try to grow the big, giant ones around here. And the other thing I would probably do is that when they're first coming up, before they start to flower, I'd probably put what's called a floating row cover over them. And that's just that, I don't know if you're familiar, it's kind of this white kind of fabric-looking thing, but they call it row covers or whatever. And that helps to keep some of the insects out when they're first coming up.
Okay.
But they are pollen, you know, they have to be bee-pollinated, and so you'd have to, you know, take that off once you start getting the flowers. Or what you could do is that you could act like a bee yourself. I don't know how much you want to get into this. You could act like a bee yourself and actually pollinate the flowers yourself and then leave the row cover on.
Uh-huh.
And then you wouldn't have to worry about quite so much about the many insects that like to attack watermelon.
So we don't need to add sand to the soil or anything. I heard they grow well in sandy soil.
Right. And they normally would. But I don't, unless you think you're really going to do this one area always in watermelon, you have to add a lot of sand, as in more than, you know, this same amount. In other words, you have 8 inches of soil, you have to add more than 8 inches of sand.
Mm, okay.
Okay. So that's a lot of sand, and you're certainly changing the area pretty much for good. So I probably wouldn't go that route. So I would think about, you know, you could do raised beds. That might be a good way to do it.
Okay.
And they also, you know, might be something where you might want to put black plastic around, you know, around them as a mulch. They like that heat. So,
okay. And full sun?
Yes, full sun. Definitely full sun.
All right. Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Good luck.
Thank you. Well, for those of you keeping score at home, the tulip tree is indeed the tree, the official tree.
Now we know.
The state tree of Indiana. And among its many names, yellow poplar, tulip poplar, tulip wood, canoe wood.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
Have all been used as names for the tulip tree. It's Indiana state tree. It's a member of the magnolia family. And apparently it says here also in this little thing, and I think this is a web page. It's from Purdue. Talked about the fact that there were so many of them in Indiana, and because people like the quality of the wood, that it was a popular choice for building log cabins.
Oh, it's a very straight tree. That's the other thing. It's very straight. I could see why lumber would be wonderful.
Yeah. All right. So there you go. State tree of Indiana.
Now we know. Do you know the state tree of Illinois?
Don't
look. Don't look at your computer.
No, actually. I guess I probably don't know the state tree. What's the state tree of Illinois?
White oak.
White oak.
Mm-hmm. It's a good choice, don't you think?
Well,
it's a beautiful
tree.
Sure,
it's a nice tree. It's amazing the stuff that you can learn.
Also native.
Also native.
Us.
All right. Okay, well, let's go on with another caller. And Mattoon is next, line three. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
I have a vegetable question. I've got some cabbage plants I planted, and it was suggested that I pinch off the bloom when it first occurs, and then I'll get numerous cabbages rather than just one fairly large one.
I never tried that technique.
Well, I haven't either.
I would think it would work.
Well,
I would think they'd be smaller, though. Probably instead of getting one big one like we normally would, you're probably going to get some numerous smaller ones, which isn't necessarily bad because usually that giant one is too big for most of us anyway.
Well, I'm just curious about it. My other question is regarding zucchini. I have about three or four hills that I planted with six or seven seeds in each one, and they're starting to come up. And in the past, since I moved from western Illinois, I've had problems with a zucchini reproducing. In other words, I'll get one nice zucchini per plant, and then the blooms are there, and they keep blooming, and they just fall off, and I can't seem to get increased production.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether it's pollination problems. The area does not get the sun as much as it probably should, but it does get several hours a day of sun.
Mm-hmm. But the plant looks healthy?
The plant's very healthy.
And you're getting some flowers?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, they get numerous blooms, but they just drop off.
Yeah. It sounds like the pollination problem.
Well, how do you hand pollinate?
Well, you have to figure out, they have male flowers and female flowers, and the female flowers are real obvious because there's kind of a, almost looks like a little baby zucchini right behind the flower, so between the flower and the stem. That makes sense. You can see there's kind of a swollen area. That makes sense.
And I have to
when you go out there, you'd see it. It's a little swollen, and you think, well, yeah, that could be a baby zucchini kind of thing. Anyway, so you look for those, and then you're going to find the other ones that don't have that, and they would have pollen. And so if you just kind of rub your hand on the inside of the flower, you get all this yellow stuff on it, and then you know that's the male. And then you just want to go ahead, and sometimes people go ahead and strip the petals off just to make it a little bit easier, but then you just go around and you kind of just pollinate the female flowers. Put a little pollen on each one of the flowers.
Well, what's happening first? Is it insects are pollinating and then they quit, or?
What's happening first? I'm not sure.
Yeah, because the first bloom usually produces
you get
zucchini.
Something.
But
mm-hmm.
they don't repeat, so I thought maybe the insects weren't pollinating. I thought they did the pollinating.
Right, they do. They would normally. And for sometimes, depending on what's going on, the weather sometimes, we don't get very good pollination on them because the insects, the bees or whatever, aren't flying. You know, if it happens to be, I don't know,
more
rainy or something, then you don't get a lot of pollination.
One more point. When I transplant from the hill, how much space? Maybe I put them too close together.
Well, it should tell you on the package, depending on the size, but, you know, at least 6 feet. I don't know how far apart you're putting them.
Well, not that far.
Yeah. They need a lot of space.
Okay.
But I would still say if you're getting flowers, you should be getting, if you're getting lots of flowers, maybe you're not getting enough, because sometimes those first ones that, you know, some, being male flowers, you may notice a lot of flowers, but sometimes there, a lot of them are males, so you don't get the production.
Well, I thought maybe it had something wrong, that they had some sort of infection or something.
No, if the plant looks good, they certainly can get some problems with it, but if the plant looks good, then it doesn't sound like you're getting the insect or disease problems that attack zucchini.
Okay, and so no need to powder the base.
Well, if you're not getting a problem, they do get some insect problems. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
They get borer and any number of things. But if you're not seeing that, maybe you're either getting lucky or you're in an area where it's not necessarily a problem for you.
Well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I'll try the pollinating.
Thank you. Good
there
luck.
There you go. Act like a bee.
We
good luck.
Have about 10 minutes left and maybe a little bit more in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Is here on the program once a month on a Tuesday, and we encourage you to call in if you have questions about things that grow in the home landscape. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And here's a caller in Champaign on our line one. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I'm calling about ash trees that we have.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. We moved into this home not quite 2 years ago, and some of the information was left behind referred to white ash that had been planted, another one to purple ash.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that they start dropping their leaves by late June or early July, and now this spring there are a lot of dead-looking branches, especially in the top of the tree. They never did completely lose the berries from last year. They get these large clumps of purple berries.
Well, if it's an ash tree, they're not getting berries.
They
have like a thing that looks like half of a maple seed. I mean, it's very dry. It's not a berry. They don't get berries.
Well,
it may be what you're seeing. There's a thing called ash flower gall that it's an insect that actually attacks the flowers, and it causes these little brown things, and sometimes people think that's the fruit.
Okay, well, in the fall, that first fall that we were here, the blackbirds came in hordes and were eating.
Well, then you don't have an ash.
Okay.
You have something else, because they don't get berries.
Okay.
So
not like the mountain ash that get the red berries?
Right, because it's a completely different genus.
Okay, well, I don't know what was planted here then. This was, we had records. It was a project house that one of the high school classes built.
Hmm.
So there were a lot of records of what had been done.
You've had a volunteer cherry tree or something that's popped up. I don't know.
No.
But I would bring in. Now, where are you located here in Champaign?
Champaign.
You can come down, bring down to our extension office.
Okay.
We're at 801 North Country Fair Drive. And just bring a nice stem section, and we'll help you identify what it is.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about the ash disease last year that was coming across the country, and I don't know if it's a disease or something else that's going on.
Yeah, ash trees seem to be having a number of different things going on with them, unfortunately, right now. So, and your best bet, again, is just trying to keep them healthy, as in watering during drought periods, those kind of things,
mm-hmm.
Is particularly important with those. So I guess that would be the best thing. I cut off anything that's obviously dead, those kind of things.
Okay, well, I'll try to get a piece of it down to the office.
Right, and you might bring in a sample of the ash tree while you're at it, so we can take a look at that if there's something going on with the leaves or something.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Next is another Champaign listener. It's line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about a gardenia plant I received about 3 weeks ago. It's beautiful. It has shiny leaves, a lot of buds, but instead of the buds blooming, they're falling off.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I'd like to know, if I can fix that.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is one of those things with gardenias. If it isn't humid enough, they like a high humidity, and if it's not humid enough, sometimes, especially if they get moved, as in you buy them and then they get moved, sometimes the buds will fall off. So you may want to try and sort of increase the humidity around them.
Okay.
So it'd be something like, and you can even do this with, you know, just get a dish with some pebbles and then put a little water in that. So they're actually kind of sitting on top of the pebbles, but then there's all this water around them.
I see.
Although it's getting kind of humid now.
Yeah, it has been.
Right. But sometimes indoors, you know, there isn't quite the humidity and stuff. So that would be one thing. And, you know, they don't like to dry out. That's the other thing.
Right. Oh, I've been keeping it.
Yeah. Point. Okay. Okay. Well, that's because that is another problem with those, too.
Yeah. So. And I was wondering, do you think misting would help it?
It's one of those things that probably misting doesn't help quite as much as we might think. You almost have to stand there and constantly mist them to really change it. So you're better off doing like the pebble tray thing that I mentioned, because then it's more constant.
I will try that.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, it's...
Well...
Bye-bye.
Thank you. We have time for some other callers. We have 7-8 minutes if some people want to give us a call. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455.
We were talking about timing and stuff, and people mentioned, when do I do what? And actually, Phil Nixon had written a nice article in one of our newsletters, the Home Yard and Garden Pest newsletter, about when the bridal wreath spireas bloom, which they're blooming right now for the most part, and kind of on their way out. But these are those big, and you'll see them all over the place, a fairly large shrub, kind of these arching branches just full of white flowers. And you travel anywhere and you're probably going to see them. But the nice thing about those is that they can be a pretty good indicator for when to spray things. So depending on where you are, because it's obviously in the northern part of Illinois as opposed to the southern part, it's going to vary. But this spirea is really a pretty good indicator. So for things like, people are always wondering about, bronze birch borer. Maybe you're trying to protect your white-barked birches, as the spireas are finishing bloom. You know, that would be a good time to do your applications for bronze birch borer. So probably a little early for that, at least in our area. But that would be a good thing. So look for those as they finish bloom. And also, once the bloom is completely finished, oyster shell scale. You know, we talked about scale before, but that would be a good time to spray for those. So it's kind of interesting how you can kind of look at those and have some of the shrubs actually give some indicators when it's a good time.
Sure.
So,
is that on your website?
It is on the U of I Extension website. I'd be glad that you can go into the. I can give that. Do you want that?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
It's www.aguc.uic.edu/CESPUBS, all one word, /HYG, as Home, Yard, and Garden.
Okay.
It's a great newsletter. I mean, it really is a wonderful resource because it gives you, okay, this is what's happening now. And it's written, Phil Nixon, Nancy Paddocky, they do a super job of putting that together.
Okay, very good. Well, we now have a couple of other callers here. We'll get them before we end up out of time. Pena is the next person, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you, my daughter just got me a Boston fern, if you want to deal with a plant. And it sheds a lot, and I put it out in the rain last night. I just wanted you to, I'll hang up after I talk to you. I just wanted you to speculate on the best care and shade, watering, and so forth. Thank you.
Sure. And Boston ferns, they're beautiful and quite available now. Probably a couple things is they're another one of those that likes high humidity. They don't like to, and they don't like to dry out. So you want to keep them moist. So, watering on a regular basis, they don't want to be sopping wet, but they need to be watered on a regular basis. Depending on where they've come from, I still would not, even though they're a fern, I would not put them out in direct sun at all. So if you're planning on putting them outside, make sure you put them in a very shady spot. And I wouldn't even necessarily give them direct light even indoors, because they don't necessarily like all that heat. So they're one of those that, if you find the right spot for them, they really can be quite beautiful, or put them under a nice shady tree, but just keep them moist. That's probably one of the big things.
Okay. I don't know if we're going to get somebody in here right before we finish. Again, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Are we, I guess you could try to get grass growing any time. Are we really past the optimum time? If you have some area you're trying to rejuvenate, or remember you're trying to start grass, have we passed that point?
Yeah, we're getting in the point, because we'd really like to have them well established before we really get into the heat. So that's one of the big problems. And so unfortunately, we're probably a little bit past that. If you're just trying to overseed, as in try to thicken up the lawn, you may be able to get away with that. But you certainly would have to water. That would be the biggest thing.
All right. Champagne line three. Hello. Is there a caller there?
Hi.
Yes.
Line three?
Yes. Go ahead.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. A glossy black chokeberry.
Uh-huh.
You know the plant?
Yes.
And it has lots of clumps of berries on it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't fall off, and nobody seems to come by and take them off.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, they must not be the favorite of birds.
They are?
No, I said they must not be because they tend to. But it makes them very ornamental that way. But they must not be the first ones to.
Oh, okay. So they're just ornamental. Period. Nobody has nothing to do with them.
Well, not necessarily. I think it's one of those things that birds have it's sort of like, I really like chocolate chip cookies, but, given a good vanilla, sugar cookie, I'd go for it. So it's the same kind of thing. Birds have their preferences, and so they probably pick those off first, the ones that they really, really like, and then later on, if they, need to, they might pick the other ones off. So there's probably some of that going on.
Well, last year's are still hanging on there.
Yeah. Oh, really? Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that obviously nobody wants to eat those right now. So yeah. Must have been a plenty of other food.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right.
They're pretty. They got a nice fall color.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I guess we're about at the point we have to finish up. Maybe you mention one more time the Champaign County Master Gardener's Garden Walk is coming up in June.
Yes.
On the 20th?
June 20th. It's a Sunday. And if people want to get tickets for that, it's a great opportunity to see some super gardens here in Champaign-Urbana. And Monticello is having their garden walk the day before, June 19th. So you can make a whole weekend of going to gardens. So June 19th and June 20th.
So we'll hope that it won't be too hot and humid.
Well, it'll be too hot to work out in your own garden, so you might as well come.
You might as well walk around somebody else's.
Walk around somebody else's.
Uh-huh.
There you go.
Okay. Well, Zandy Mason is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She is here the second Tuesday of the month. We start in the spring and do the summer and into the fall, so you can ask questions about things that grow in the home landscape. Another program that you might want to tune in for is a program called Illinois Gardener, and that's on Thursday nights. It is Thursday nights.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They keep moving around.
I know.
Thursday night, 7 o'clock, and Diane Nolan is host, is produced here at WILL Television, and she has different guests every week, people who work in some of the local landscaping and mm-hmm. greenhouse and plant places, sometimes people from the U of I. And there is on that program, like with this, an opportunity for people to call in and ask questions. So there's always a panel of experts, and if you have some plant questions or plant problems, you can call in. So if you don't know about that show and you're a gardener, you ought to be watching. It's Illinois right. Gardener, Thursday nights, WILL TV, 7 o'clock. Well, thanks very much.
Yes, thank you.
Our program, Focus 580, is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nickel, from Thrifty Nickel's American Classifieds, that's distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Coming up in the next part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about politics in Britain and the decision by the Prime Minister to support the United States in its war in Iraq. We'll have two guests, both political scientists who follow British politics, David Coates from Wake Forest University and Joel Krieger from Wellesley. Together, they are the co-authors of a book titled Blair's War that's recently been published, and we'll talk about that in the next part of Focus 580. Right now, though, we'll break. We'll have news at 1 minute past the hour, and before that, an update on the commodity markets.
Thank you very much, Dave. Good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey. Looking at the current tick, May wheat at 376 down.